At some point, you're going to become somebody who's very, very healthy. At some point, you're going to become so feeble that every part of your body, as you go on and on with this body, every part of your body practically is going to disappoint you. Your legs are giving on you. Your bones will ache with arthritis. You have trouble breathing. Just have trouble sleeping. So, we know that that is there because we see it happening to everyone and it's happening to us. As you go older and older, you'll find the body makes all kinds of changes. Or as you have whatever come out of your house or whatever, you see it falling apart. Repairs. Your car, you get a new car. And after a while, you're driving it nice. Next thing you know, you got a few repairs. Next thing you know, you got more repairs. Next thing you know, you got a lemon. Big headache. It disappoints you sometimes when you need it the most. So all of these things happen before us every day. And because of that, we don't want to have to deal with these things as if we're thinking that they are not going to fall apart, and then we're so disappointed and devastated, or we sell our souls for these temporary considerations. We want to be able to be in a consciousness that we are, in a healthy way, taking care of our most important responsibility, and that is developing our consciousness. If our work, our job, our life is not somehow letting us become more devotion by what we are learning from that or by what we are seeing. Sometimes one even has a job that's so taxing that the effect is still there, very spiritual. Because then when you are associating with devotees, it helps you to appreciate even more the intensity and the importance of being in a devotional community and having devotional exchange. So even that can be used in such a way. Read two more short letters. Regarding your question about kirtan, practically, we're not concerned with the instrument. They are used sometimes to make it sweeter. But if we divert our attention for using instruments more, that is not good. Meaning that, again, it is an exchange of love and of devotion. And if we get too much caught up in just the instruments themselves, then that becomes a distraction. That becomes then like the idol rather than the offering to the Lord. We can accept everything for Krishna's service, but not take the risk of diverting attention to any other thing, which will hinder our Krishna consciousness. That should be our motto or principle. Regarding your request for a kirtan musician, we don't require anyone who is very musically talented. Here in New Vrindavan, Hayagriva has organized a very nice kirtan party, and they are singing and chanting. And similarly, you have Rishi Kumara, Madhusana, Uddhava, as well as others. So if you will think of all you are deficient, I can send you a tape recording teaching playing techniques, and you will learn from them. I think it was Bhakti Siddhanta who said that a very good kirtan player or bhajan singer sometimes has a disqualification for devotion. Why is that? Because it's the same thing. Sometimes one who has a very, very beautiful voice or a very expert musician, sometimes they will be in a mood of making themselves the actual sinner. And again, instead of really in tuning in to a devotional cry and a devotional prayer as they are singing and performing, they are more or less performing so everyone can enjoy their performance. It's like there's sometimes cases where someone is like a brahmachari and they are such a good performer. When they perform, they're playing the drum or playing the harmonium, they're looking to see which mother is enjoying their playing. Thinking, oh yes, I'm wonderful, isn't it? So sometimes in the earlier days, someone would be seemingly a very strict brahmachari, but the mothers would know, oh, it's only a matter of time. Because they could see that actually he is just pretending and is just playing so nicely, but looking, oh yes. See, I'm the one. I'm so nice. Such a way. Which is a matter, obviously, of one pursuing distinction, adoration, and profit, or distinction of such, and such situations is a little dangerous. That's why entertainers, devotees become an entertainer or is involved in that field, is very dangerous, because as we look, it's like I was speaking to some of the devotees here, and some of my disciples in Africa, who are like professional musicians. And it's very heavy, because for someone who's very heavy into music, it's like a drug. It can be like a drug. It also has a certain intoxication. And it can, you know, one can be addicted. And every time they go into a stage and they're, you know, playing at this club or that place or this group, that somehow they just become like a different person. And when you are playing in the public situation where people are smoking and drinking and all the energies are on you, and you get into all of that, then it's very dangerous. Because then it's like you become a whole part of that collective energy. That's why you see in many places where people are performing, that the crowd gets into a frenzy and even start fighting, huh? There's some singers who, whenever they perform, people just start throwing each other up and punching each other and start bumping each other into the walls and whatnot. Or there's certain singers that certain halls, you know, will not let them perform. Because when they come, the people always tear up the furniture and tear up things. You know, because of, you know, the kind of music that's there. So, that shows the power of music, and it shows the power that if something can be used in a positive way, then how also powerful it can be for affecting people's consciousness. You see. Or those of you, you know, who are musicians, then you know that when you get into your music, sometimes you can practice and you can tune everything off. Huh? Patrick is like that sometimes, right? Then you can get into the music and you can just forget everything. Or some of you, I guess maybe got three or four musicians here. They know that sometimes they can feel down or something. Just go in the room, close the door, and play the instrument, and it becomes a form of therapy. You know? Because it's powerful, very powerful, in such extent. And some people, they can play for like 8 hours a day. Some people can just get, it's almost like a trance, you know? They can just zoom in. That shows the power that sound vibration and music can actually have. So as that is channeled more and more, then how much that can be such a powerful effect and conscious raising, you know, in general. Then Prabhupada says, regarding crying, when someone cries during kirtan, this crying is crying of the soul. But if someone tries to imitate that crying to get some adoration, that is a bodily function. So sometimes the kirtan is so sweet, or sometimes one is in a meditation, a deep reflection on service, or on trying to be better, or on trying to understand things better. And then one will just find that tears will come from the eyes, etc. Prabhupada said that is crying from the soul, etc. But if someone is trying to show how realized or how devotional they are, by everyone, let everyone see, oh, just see. See, I am having great, static symptoms. Just notice, I am a very advanced devotee. And Prabhupada says, and that is adoration, that is a bodily function. Regarding your question about feeling emotions during kirtan, these are real spiritual emotions. Spiritual emotions cannot be experienced by the fallen soul. One who is feeling spiritual emotions is not actually fallen. That is a benediction of this sankirtan movement, that it elevates one of the highest positions of spiritual experiences. Here, president from other sinners, Hayagriva, Rupanuga, Kirtananda, yesterday they played the church organ very nicely. We're going to have another meeting this evening with organ playing. So everything is going nice in this center. And perhaps you remember the park which they have constructed is very, very nice. My dear son, please accept my blessing. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter. Now here, Prabhupada was saying organ can be used. Sometimes these may seem contradictory. If you look at the totality, you see the great knowledge that's coming out. Now there was a time when we had what's called roadshow, where you know, some musicians and devotees were going around from college to college, and they were having programs, and many people were coming. But then, in that time, Prabhupada stopped it. He says, yes, you'll attract people, but then you will attract them, you know, for the wrong reason. So it is also the duty of the spiritual master to constantly engage in Deksha Kalapatra, time, place, circumstance, and giving instruction. So in some cases, Prabhupada may encourage somebody to pursue music and to do kirtan like that and use the instrument, use that. In some cases, he also addressed that they shouldn't. They should not be trying to be expert musicians. Well, what is the difference? The difference is a matter of the effect. That if someone becomes so intoxicated with the idea of being a musician that their relationships are down or not very good, they're not becoming more humble, they're not becoming more devotional, and they are so much enjoying the distinction, the adoration, the popularity, then it becomes like a distraction. Even though they are vibrating the sound vibration of the Lord, but if they themselves are not seeing themselves more as a servant of the Lord, but are beginning to become more intoxicated with the controlling energy, then one day they will just leave and consider, I can do better if I am in this circle, that center, this place, that place, making money, and doing recordings, and then I should be doing this kind of music, that kind of music, because they will be putting the idea of becoming famous before the idea of really of trying to share, etc. And so Prabhupada stopped the roadshow because he felt so many devotees were coming from all over the country to join, and they were leaving that service and dropping that. Oh, here they can be, you see a musician, and it was causing too much disturbance and such. And then within that circle, too much seemingly was connecting with people of mundane energy. And so instead of dovetailing, instead of kind of infiltrating to give Krishna, more or less the infiltration was going and more material infiltration was coming, within the environment. So that can happen in different types of associations. One may be becoming more like what they are having a role play as, more than getting people to enter and become more like, like the devotion. So last letter. So in these cases, that's where a spiritual master is important, or guidance, or some type of mentorship. There can be a monitoring and to see, well, is the devotion increasing, or is the attempt to give the devotion causing more contamination, and the results are more people falling into maya, etc. Those things must be individually judged, etc. Please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter dated March 25th, 1971, and have noted the contents. Because I have been very busy with the movement which is going on here, I haven't had time to reply your letter until now. As soon as I remember that you are trying to fulfill my desire, or trying to open 10 centers, it gives me renewed vigor in life. Please do it nicely. I've got confidence in you because Krishna has given you special talent for chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. When you were chanting in Los Angeles Temple, in the evenings or in the mornings, I enjoyed your chanting so nicely that I thought myself immediately carried to Vaikuntha. Very nice honor to Mr. Bodhi. So I'm always thankful to you for your activity in announcing the interest of our mission. Thank you very much. Most probable, when I return to Los Angeles, I may call you back just to hear your chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. I'm very anxious to meet you also. And this is a letter to Vishnujan. Vishnujan Maharaj was a very, very powerful Bhajan Kirtan devotee. Very angelic voice, like a Gandhava or a resident of the higher kingdom who comes in this world with tremendous, musical talent and ability. And Prabhupada was, not only Prabhupada, but devotees just loved to hear him chant. And his presence was like so powerful that he would just appear and just smile and just start singing and playing. It just would like, just capture everybody, He's a very, very unusual devotee. He always had such vibrance, in that sense. It was like a Pied Piper, People were just drawn to him, in that sense. He left his body. And Prabhupada said he was making advancement in the higher world. He didn't go all the way back to God yet. He committed seemingly suicide or something. some trauma got in his life at one point. And Prabhupada said he is continually, making advancement. But Prabhupada was saying how he was very happy when that devotee would sing. The devotee would sing with such devotion. Sometimes he would just sing all night long. He just people would be sleeping, he'd just be in the temple with the harmonium, just singing. And you hear it, you just feel like, almost like crying, it just swept over you, like real powerful. Very, very powerful. It shows that sound vibration can be so powerful according to the degree of intensity of a cry out to Krishna or service to Krishna. When in the other sense, someone was a powerful musician, very expert, then Prabhupada heard his playing and said, who is that? Who is that down there? Performing in that way. But we want to do everything in the spirit of an offering to the Lord, so that it is clothed in very deep, deep devotion and deep love. Any questions or comments? Anyone here? This is one of very, very powerful medias of how the world is being harnessed by the kind of music and the kind of lyrics, the kind of entertainers that are now sweeping much of the community. And those who have children have to be a little careful about what kind of songs the children are singing and what we listen to ourselves. We need to be a little more in tune to what our feelings are when we hear different type of music. And if it's not something that is seemingly helping us to focus more, then we should be careful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In relation to that devotee who was chanting, although seemingly materially very nice, in regard to invoke
the 10 offenses that you just said, we chant every morning, there are also 10 offenses that apply to any form of kirtan or any form of calling the Lord's name. It's not just the japa mala, but those same things that we should not do, when we do them, then it minimizes any calling of the Lord's name, that we do. It makes it impotent. So those 10 offenses is the whole culture of how one should be careful to avoid those things, so that the chanting, whether it's the mala or the kirtan or the bhajan, so that it actually has potency, more and more potency.
I was trying to figure out which one does chanting, like the devotee with that kind of mood, who's chanting because he wants everyone to say, "Oh, what a nice kirtan person I am." Is that inattentive, or what is it?
Well, see, that chanting is just the conclusion of a product that has a whole consciousness behind it. In other words, if we would look closer at that devotee's life, we would find that devotee is not strict. We would find that devotee is breaking some of the 10 offenses to be avoided. And so therefore, now that devotee is even chanting and is sort of materially expert, because that devotee is blaspheming other devotees, that devotee is committing sin on the strength of chanting, breaking some principles, or that devotee is disobeying the order of guru, then you'll find, as you go to 10 offenses, then that chanting, Prabhupada is hearing that chanting, and now experiencing also the whole performance of feeling one as a sinner, and chanting in the spirit of being there with the Lord, but really chanting, "Everybody hear my beautiful voice. How wonderful I am." That same kind of mentality does not give the person strength to avoid certain fall downs. That same kind of mentality is associated will cause other types of weaknesses. Now the way to deal with that is that if one follows the 10 principles closely, then one will not have that sort of mentality.
Chanting with devotion, does it not come out to the hearer? If you're really chanting with devotion, somebody hears you. So this person is chanting with devotion. If there is some tinge of adoration and everything, it also comes out. You can feel it.
Sometimes. Some people are more sensitive than others. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody can chant with like serious devotion. and they can't even carry a tune. You know? It doesn't mean that, you know, because you hear it and it kind of sounds like a little hard to your ears. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean that it's not devotional.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a conscious thing. Somebody may be sharp enough or sensitive enough, even though that person is like not even able to carry a tune, they may think, wow, it's really a cry. It's really a devotional cry.
I remember in Belize, Shunaka Prabhu, the Padyatra leader, he came there and he was telling us this story that when he was in Miami temple, one Indian man, gentleman came. So he went and put on some music by some devotees. And this man, that person chanting is not chanting, it's like chanting for adoration. I don't want that music. He brought another music and he thought this one is so well. And this person is like, we listen to his chanting. He has chanted many of the, you know, verses. And he put on that, he said, that music is not right. That person is not chanting with devotion. And he came, he brought Prabhupada, and when he put Prabhupada on, he said, yes, here's devotion. So, you know, when he said that, you know, what affected me, I was thinking, yeah, there are many of us who may be chanting, but to the degree of our purity, that chanting is actually affecting or not affecting people's consciousness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. With the chanting, and well, with the japa chanting.
Japa chanting, yeah.
Just as we say, there's no heart and says it with chanting. But again, according to devotion, it's how effective the chanting is. Somebody's chanting Hare Krishna on their japa beads, and their minds are like completely, completely far away. Somebody's chanting, and inwardly they're really thinking, you know, when am I going to give up all of these bad patterns? When am I going to have more faith? Dear Lord, please let me become a better servant. All this stuff I get is in the stream of my service to you. And they're chanting more in a sense of intensity. Even though in both cases, you know, the chanting, the physical thing is going on, etc. But the Lord knows the degree of genuineness, of seriousness, of what the real intent is.
Srila Krishna, I have a question before that. Why is it that most of the time, you know, there's this story that in New York, one of the temples, some devotees who are susceptible to seeing this ghost and so forth, he comes down and he says, there are ghosts in the temple, a lot of them, and sometimes you go to temples and you see the ghost, but well, the chanting of the deities are there, the chanting is there, but these ghosts stay in the temples. What is the essence?
Many times we get buildings. Like many times the devotees buy buildings or rent buildings that, you know, like a big buildings where sometimes a funeral home, sometimes, you know, a mansion, etc. And such places like that, even more than other places, they draw, you know, disembodied entities because of people's heavy, heavy attachment. You find calluses, tassels, you know, probably all of them are ghostly hunters because they have a whole line, have a heritage of people who are attached there and whatnot. And then, of course, funeral home, you know, dead bodies are there, and so you attract those sorts of things. But also, when devotees practice these teachings and don't follow, then they open up to be possessed. It's very dangerous to be in a highly spiritualized environment and to cheat. It's like we have, you know, cases in New York for some time. When we had a huge building in New York, that we had a couple of cases of people who, we had one case of somebody jumping out a window. We had another case of something happened to someone. Because, but in every case, the person who this happened to was like a deviant. Living in the temple, going out to get some intoxication, sneaking back in, doing this. Sometimes we mention how, and when you take the devotion, your whole subtle body begins to also change. Like a moth gets drawn to the light. Gets so much captured in light. Well, one, there's different types of disembodied entities, without getting too much into the psychic stuff. But there's some entities who are like trapped, who are not impious, but they are also ghosts, for lack of a better word. And they also get drawn to where devotion is, because they kind of want to be released, or they want to kind of capture some of the energy to be elevated so they can move on. And so sometimes people, devotees, get very much bombarded. Some devotees who are more sensitive, they can get bombarded by disembodied entities or ghosts who are not really negative, but just entities who are like drawn, kind of like need help or want help or want to be around an environment to kind of get some energy. Or you have cases where it is disembodied entities that are devious or mischievous, etc., and looking for physical bodies to enter inside. So keep in mind that the ghost has the desires of a materialist, but not the physical form to enjoy it in. It's like a limbo state where the soul is in the subtle body, but it hasn't taken on another physical body yet. So it's like frustrated in one sense. People commit suicide. There's certain cases where you have to take a ghostly form for a certain while. Now, what happens is that those entities often want to enter into a physical body so that it can experience more of the gross sensual stimulation. And they will try to find bodies that they can enter into. So they then will be active into seances, or people who do various types of occult things because they draw that. Or people who are ready for so much for power and control that they're ready to let their bodies, be used. Well, similarly, someone who may be a deviant, who is in a highly spiritual atmosphere, because atmospheres draw the polarity. Just like the more a spiritual person is, the more they will draw demons as well as spiritual helpers. It's like in any of the great acharyas, around them also will be great spiritual helpers, beings, but also demons. It's like even around Krishna. Krishna has these great servants, and also constantly the demons are trying to attack or calling his name or whatnot, because they also get liberated by the exchange, or they get drawn to that. And that's, it's a little bit taxing on some people. Some people who are very sensitive, when they come around a devotee community and they sleep in an atmosphere where the devotees have all kinds of experiences, glorious and also some attacks. Sometimes they're attacked because somebody wants to chase them out of the devotional atmosphere also. Now, the significant thing is, one, is whenever one is getting bombarded by such things, that you can engage it in a devotional activity. You find that you're getting some connections when you're sleeping, then it may be some soul that wants to be helped by you. And therefore, you just invite it to read with you, to chant with you, to have kirtan with you, etc. Because there's so much of existence. As Prabhupada explains it, there's the fairies, and there's the dwarfs, and there's the hobgoblins, and there's this, and there's that, and all kinds of different living species. The 8,400,000 species is in no way all human bodies. Human forms is just one form. So many other different types of forms. But the danger is that when someone falls weak and starts like breaking principles, then what happens is that sometimes the big demons will try to take advantage of that person, because now what they do is that they control that person's mind and consciousness as a way to cause sabotage. This is dangerous. You'll find sometimes someone becomes like very, very, almost wicked, even though they've been a devotee. And something that life changes so much, and they start blaspheming the books, blaspheming the guru, blaspheming devotees, become possessed. You see it many times, in different environments where devotee is like acting totally beyond themselves. They're carrying, extra weight. They're carrying, it's like, what do we call it, the time sharing, huh? They're carrying other entities. And one can be possessed with many different entities inside of them. Sometimes somebody exercises someone,
They may take out four or five different personalities. You know, some ghost enters and says, come on, there's more room here. Come on. I mean, you know, these all this stuff goes on. It's nothing spiritual. It's just, you know. But just to understand it, why there are cases when someone is in a devotional environment and becomes, you know, almost like wicked. It means they've opened themselves up because they're in a surcharge environment that draws both polarities, and now they begin to be used in ways that they may not even understand. You know, this is fine now that they become very, you know, resentful toward this and that and that and that. And in most cases, they're carrying, you know, another entity.
It's not at all surprising that in a spiritual atmosphere, a very devotional atmosphere, you can see both polarities there, because actually the energies are both Krishna's energy.
Exactly.
So they are both the negative and the positive are finding refuge in him. Mm-hmm. Somehow or other they want to take advantage.
Plus, is it working now? Okay. Plus, just like, we don't do this, but the Ananda Margi, they go to graveyards, you know. I mean, it's a secret part of their, you know, their movement. But they actually, at a certain level of initiation, they go to graveyards at 12 o'clock at night, and they take their clothes off, and they meditate. Now, they're involved in, you know, in tantric worship, and they worship Shiva, so they have their own, you know, types of worship activities. But in a general sense, that worship is also, or that activity is also to see how strong the individual's devotion is, or how strong their psychic and devotional sense is. Because when they go to those places, they invoke or they draw those entities. And they have, they're like warriors, you know, they're like kshatriyas. So the kshatriya also gets his strength by combat. And because they are worshippers of Shiva, they worship in a mode of passion, in some aspects a mode of ignorance, but it's worship. So what they do is that they actually put themselves to a test to see how they can become unafraid, to see how they are having sufficient devotion, faith, and conviction, that now when they invoke those things come to attack them, that they're able to absorb them or defeat them. So they have that kind of practice. It's not really that they go to worship, you know, the dead, even though we don't encourage anything like this, but they have their Shiva bhaktas. And so they go, and they do, I think once or twice a month they do this. You know, all of their avadutas and sannyasis, they do like this. So they'll go to the graveyard and they do these things, or sometimes they'll know a house is haunted, and a couple of them will go there just knowing that it's haunted, with the idea of combating with the energy to defeat it, so that they can see what level of strength they develop, or that they can know what they got to work on. You see, it's dangerous stuff, but you know, they're kshatriyas, and kshatriyas, you know, warriors sometimes are like that in that sense. So that is also a idea or connection where someone is trying to deal in those levels of energy for trying to see their position. Now, for the devotees, if you grow in devotional service and you are part of a surcharge atmosphere, if you are not becoming more devotional, then you also be not. You also be not. As a way of Krishna also letting you know what things you have to work on. Especially renunciate, or someone is trying to be guru or sannyasi, that it's a do or die, that if you are not devotionally backed up, you will fall, you will be not. Because when you go out as a general, and you go out trying to lead a brigade, and you don't have your weapons, and you're on the front line, you're going to get knocked. And it's like a way
of the transcendental system substantiating itself. Because if somebody is going out there as a general, and they got people behind them, and the people are going to follow their steps, and if they don't have their weapons themselves, then they're bringing people on the whole idea of illusion. So Krishna lets the demigods as well as the demons. Even demigods, they knock people. Demigods, one, are not always pure devotees. Some of them are very concerned about, you know, their own position. And some of them are just like the rich and super rich. They kind of enjoy, you know, being elitist. And if somebody's trying to enter into their realm without paying their dues, or somebody's trying to enter it and they're artificial, they're not backed up, then they knock the person. It's like, you know, there's a country club, and people are part of that country club because they are multi-millionaires. And somebody tries to come in one day, he rents a limousine, he rents a nice suit, you know, borrows some diamonds, you know, from the pawn shop. And then, you know, he goes in, and they look at him and realize that they're talking with him, that he's not really of the same quality. And they invite the guy out. So when someone is pretending like that, they get it from the demons as well as from the demigods. That's why it is actually very dangerous to be a devotee and not to follow the principles. Because one thing is like, it's like you're playing with God. Or you're minimizing the powerful spiritual energy that is a part of the spiritual atmosphere. And it's especially dangerous for someone to be a general, or for someone to be a renunciate, or for someone to be a guru, and not to follow. Because there's a passage in the Shri Upanishad that mentions that such person is called a killer of the soul. It's like these reverends or ministers or imams or yogis or gurus who lead people and they consciously make some sin or they cheat. They go to a special hell because people come to them with faith and devotion and many times lose interest in pursuing God because they get cheated. They connect that with the whole idea of pursuing God consciousness. And therefore, because it's a delicate position, the Lord puts special tax on such souls that if they deviate, then they have to pay like heavy price. Well, we know that any leader is experiencing, just like the Bhagavatam explains, that the king or the president, they're experiencing so much percentage of the karma of those who they work under. And therefore, you grow like anything. You're devotional. You experience the good results of those who you help. And if you are not, you know, if people are engaged in too much sin, or if you engage in sin, then you experience so much, you know, so much of that. So in one way, that the spiritual system is so scientifically arranged is when you're in a spiritual atmosphere, if you're not accessing more and more of the Parampara protection, then you will be knocked as a way of Krishna letting you know that you're not properly under the umbrella. It's like Krishna's love in showing you that, hold it, you're not properly reinforced. And therefore, the knock is really an exchange of love to show the person you got to get your stuff together. But the more it's a highly spiritualized atmosphere, the more it draws both polarities. It draws heavier demons to attack. It draws also more sense of divinity. And if one is not careful, then one will become like even like an enemy to the spiritual energy without even knowing it, because then the negative energies and negative beings and even disembodied entities will enter. There are so many people now who are having light, you know, possession. Because when you look at the way the karmis are living and the things they have to think about, the things they do, the things they eat, etc., they draw, they attract so many of these entities now who want to have bodies to be able to enjoy. And that's why yesterday was explaining that even now it's happening, but very soon, if a person doesn't have spiritual culture, if a person is not vibrating in some spiritual names of God, is not involved in some spiritual atmosphere, that they will be completely slaves to sense gratification, to material life, and their free will mean almost nothing. Because now there's practically no free will now. I mean, how are you free? You gotta pay taxes. You have to practically have credit, have a credit card, or you have to be a part of the establishment. You have to have this number, that number. You know, you're so much bound by this, by that. If you try to raise in certain political positions, certain educational positions, certain religious positions, that unless you adhere to certain bureaucracies, in most cases you can't become those things. So already people are very much enslaved. Now you read the newspaper, the magazine, the television, and you're getting just bombarded constantly. So really, people have little space to be able to think their own thoughts. It's only those who are absorbed more in some spiritual connection that they have a real sense of some use of free will. Otherwise, most people not in free will. What they're calling free will, they're just being bouncing from one situation to the next because the economic, the political, and the educational factors are just picking them up and dragging them here, dragging them here, dragging them here. Any other questions?
Sri Krishna, going back to the consciousness of chanting, sometimes we feel we chant out of duty. We know that we're supposed to sing and chant for the deities, but our heart's not really in it. Maybe we're tired or whatever. So how do we improve that consciousness?
Improve the consciousness by looking closer at what we're doing. When you come before the deity and you don't feel a sense of reverence and enthusiasm, it means the deity is letting you know the deity is not pleased. Like sometimes you can come before the deity and you know, especially you can sense it more with, you know, with bigger deities. Sometimes you can come before the deity, come in the temple and look at the deity, and you want to run out. Because as we surrender and serve, there is, even in our neophyte states, there is reciprocation. You know, and then other times, because of the quality of your devotion and whatnot, you just feel a certain sense of well-being. But there are times when you come into the deity, or you come into the kirtan, and you're just kind of wondering, I mean, why don't he hurry up and blow the conch shell so the kirtan can be over? See? Because in consciousness you're thinking, you're not feeling well. Because you know that you look back at what you did the last day or 2 days or what you did that week, that it wasn't pleasing to the Lord. And the Lord is sending you some signal that you ain't right. In that sense. We've all had that experience. You've all had the experience that sometimes you're around devotees and you don't want to be around them because you're embarrassed. Inwardly you're embarrassed about what you're carrying. Or sometimes you see the deity, or sometimes you see the guru, and you wish that you could avoid it. Avoid him because you don't feel right based on the way you've been thinking and what you've been doing. And other times you feel very happy. You feel very much a well-being. These are nice markers sometimes to help us in taking a closer look at at what we're doing. Especially any of you who like break principles. You break principles and you come the next day in front of the deity and you'll see. You feel zapped. You're totally different. You break principles, you come before the guru, and you may pretend to smile and do this, do that, but inwardly you know you feel drained. You feel zapped. Any other questions?
Your question, Pan. What happens if you're doing the arti and you're really into it, you're feeling good about it, but your mind conjures up little images every now and again that you wish would not be there? What do you do, or what kind of sinful reactions you incur?
It's natural. Those things happen sometimes. It's just the mind. Just the mind. I remember one devotee wrote Prabhupada that every time they would do arti, you know, to Jagannath, they start hearing this music, you know, Felix the Cat. Yeah, this is you didn't know about this. This is some sort of cartoon stuff that Americans used to watch. And they'd just be hearing, you know, Felix the Cat, Felix the Cat. So they wrote Prabhupada and says, don't worry. The mind, yeah, it's like a cartoon thing. Because devotees on the altar trying to do serious worship and they just get this cartoon music, you know. I feel embarrassed. So the mind does all kind of stuff. in trying to, you know, fight the idea, you know, of actually surrendering. You always remember, the mind is like a living entity. And the more that you're trying to put your essence to Krishna, the more the mind fights it. Because the mind has been programmed, it's like a computer. It's been so programmed, you know, to react in a certain way. And so it'll fight. And the more you're throwing off the mind, the more the mind kicks, it makes its last kick. So as you start putting the mind more and more under control, the mind is even going to appear to you and give you more trouble than you've ever had. Even to the point that as you're about to shed and really put the mind under control, one day the mind is going to say, what is Krishna? What is Guru? What is the stuff you've been chanting for 10, 15 years? You fool. What are you doing all this time? All this wasting hypnotic stuff you're doing. I mean, the mind will one day, as you're throwing it off, it'll one day make you think, hey, but how do you know Krishna is really God? I mean, you know, what is this? And it'll be real strong, very strong. Because as you're kicking it off, as you're throwing it off, it has to do its last, you know, greatest attacks in a personal posture. They are not in the mindset of personal reciprocation, of desiring personal exchange. They're not in the mindset of making personal offerings to the Lord. And so therefore, there's no need for them to have a body that is able to sing, to dance, to associate with the Lord. So we have to be more careful about what we think you said. Have to look a little closer and take inventory about what kind of thoughts are dominant in our consciousness, and then immediately we can see each day why we are in such a state of reflection. We can see why we're happy, or why we're sad, or why we're anxious, etc. Because we are building something based on such thoughts. So now these great souls, knowing our construction of how we are constantly stacking up superfluous and necessary things, maintaining the temporary, then they just come in with these beautiful songs and bhajan and prayers and books as a way to try to bring us to jiva jago. We wake up, right? Realize our identity as spirit soul. So they sneak in into the atmosphere, so to speak, by giving us something to connect with, as everyone likes to sing, likes to dance, likes to eat. All of these things can be done, but for the Lord in such a way. But the demons also know these things. They try to then distract living entities more and more away from the anti-material by putting them more in the gross state. What to say of now, with so much of the lyrics, so much of the songs that people are hearing, and the repetition, and the hypnotic effects, etc., of how so much is being carried through the mediums, of music. As anyone can see, that you put certain type of music on, you play, or you hear certain music, sometimes some music makes you very peaceful. Other type of music makes you feel tense. Other types of music makes you feel even angry, agitated, lusty. Makes you feel like you have to run out and do something. You have to grab somebody. You have to do this. You have to run. You have to satisfy some urges. According to how the sound vibration is affecting the mind and affecting the chakras, or the areas in the body where there is a storage of certain subtle or psychic energy. And sound vibration affects other vibration. In one sense, the whole physical body and matter itself is just a matter of atoms, molecules, neutrons, photons vibrating at a certain rate or intensity. So therefore, in one sense, everything breaks down to sound. And then, of course, goes farther to spirit. But things, matter breaks down to sound. So then sound has effect on matter. And sound has effect on other sound. And sound has an effect, a direct effect on consciousness. My father says in the next letter, I am so pleased to read your letter of January the 21st, 1969, and to learn of your sincere eagerness to serve Krishna in the best capacity of your talents. There is a Sanskrit proverb that says, there is not any better knowledge than to become a musician. Our Krishna conscious movement is practically based upon music and dancing. If by your exceptional qualities you can help in this movement, I think you have been sent by Krishna himself to help me in this connection. I have one nice disciple, Michael Grant, that's Mukunda, who is a very good composer of Western music. He was earning lots of money in New York as a professional music teacher, but since he has become my disciple, he has dedicated his life for propagating his movement along with his wife. I shall be glad if you immediately contact him in London. I've got a very ambitious program to organize a nice Sankirtan party, both in the Orient and Occidental style. Remember, there are different styles of kirtan, different styles of bhajan, different styles. We see as we look at some of the nice examples of the pure devotees. We see how, just like Musi Narottama, in his own style, special style of kirtan, we see that devotees in places like Manipur, they have a certain aspect of the kirtan, certain cultural aspect that brings in the nice sweetness. I have got a very ambitious program, but in Oriental and Occidental style, so that we can thus attract all classes of people in the world of Krishna consciousness. In other words, everyone should feel that Krishna consciousness is for them. It is not to be an imposition, because it is the universal knowledge and universal culture. And it is the devotee's duty to try to let everyone feel that Krishna is their best friend, or their ultimate protector, ultimately the greatest lover, the greatest friend, etc. Regarding the Ragipati Raghava song, we're not concerned with this song, because it has a political motive. It's like sometimes people have translated the Bhagavad Gita, and they've translated it in such a way to make it poetic or historical, with the major emphasis in that sense more than philosophical. And so what happens in such translations, that they lose the actual heart of the text, and they interpolate, speculate, engage in conjecture, and start giving some idea of what they think Krishna is saying, or giving some allegories, etc., rather than dealing with the actual subject matter, letting Krishna speak for himself. So sometimes people will use these sort of things in such a way that they will push their own idea or concern. So Prabhupada says, regarding the Raghu Pati Raghava song, we are not concerned with this song because it has a political motive. It is not pure devotional service. Gandhi was a great statesman in the garb of a saintly person, so that the Indian population would blindly follow him. But his motive was political, and we are therefore not very interested with it. However, you can sing the first two lines. In other words, what Prabhupada is emphasizing here is, although the words themselves addressing, Lord Ram, but he is showing how sometimes, even in music, there can be some political connections. One has to be a little careful about what they're singing, what the lyrics are, and even sometimes what the rhythms are. Because sometimes some things are such a build-up that it just makes aggression. Regarding your questions about various names of God, we have nothing to do with Jehovah, Allah, Jesus, etc. If somebody else wants to chant this way, it is all right. Let them do that. But as far as we're concerned, we should be satisfied with chanting the Krishna mantra. Now, of course, Prabhupada in several places says there's no hard and fast rule by chanting the names of the Lord. Or Prabhupada in certain places emphasizes that any name of God that you chant, that it is potent. Well, yes, that is true, but at the same time, different names connotate about different aspects of the Godhead. Just as somebody can have many, many names, And so what happens is that even though they have many names, a name addresses certain activities or certain aspects about the person's character. Someone calls a person by a nickname in relationship to where they lived and played when they were young. Somebody calls them by another name, by the name that they were known in school. Someone calls them by a certain name that they were referred to in the university or in college. Or someone calls them a name in relationship to their father, such and such son, etc. So each of these names are there, but each name is kind of connecting with a certain aspect of the person's personality, activities, etc. So when we are calling on the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna, then we are connecting and addressing the activities of the Lord, who has impersonal aspects, who has different energies, external, marginal, internal, and who at the same time has created and maintained all of creation, but is at the same time outside of the creation and can be related to through different vasa exchanges. Well, if we call Lord Narayan, we're talking about the Lord in the sense of being served and worshiped, the Lord in the heart, or referring to the Lord who is served in awe and reverence. So there is different connection. We speak in terms of Lord Ram or Allah or Jehovah. We're talking about God mainly in Allah, Jehovah, the Lord mainly in terms of the Godhead, in terms of the Creator, etc., and the Maintainer. Not in terms of the Lord so much as friend, or the Lord so much as the child, etc. So there's a section in Chaitanya Charitamrita that explains how so many names of Ram are equal to so many names of Krishna. How many more names it takes of Ram equal to the name of Krishna. We have registered our association particularly under the name of Krishna. God has millions of names, undoubtedly, but we are especially concerned with the name of Krishna because we are in the cyclic succession of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who chanted this holy name of Krishna. Everyone should be particular to his particular specific succession or sampradaya's relative principles. That is required, much as there are many different political parties, although everyone is meant to serve the country. I have already acknowledged receipt of your nicely taped kirtan recording. I think that the madanga sound should be a little more increased, and the tambora sound should be decreased. When the chorus is chanting in response to the leader, the madanga is not very distinctly heard. Therefore, it should be increased. As for when this record will be pressed, I think this should be done as soon as possible, because everyone is already wanting this record. If you cannot get it pressed immediately, then I have asked Brahmananda to arrange for the pressing. I have heard that Dynapon Company can give such pressing at a competitive price. The jacket design you have described sounds nice, so you may develop it in this way. Regarding the presentation of the Govindam, as well as other mantras, the vibration is always pure. These are the prayers, Govindam, Mani Purusham. I will give the theme, and if the sound is westernized, it does not matter. But another point is that specific sound of kirtan as I sing is also another introduction of the art that can be intermingled with the Western art. So here Prabhupada was giving devotees an idea of how to intermingle the song, the music in such a way that it would have a Western and non-Western flavor to it. And such combination will certainly be appreciated. But so far, I know that the kirtan tune is a specific representation of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And this tune is appreciated all over India as unique. They say that the kirtan tune is a specific gift of Bengal. And that is a fact. So why not utilize this tune in the Western countries under the able guidance of such expert musicians as George Harrison? The first two lines of the song, Hari Haraya Namaha Krishna, were sung by Lord Chaitanya and his followers. But the other lines of the song were composed later on by Srila Narottam Das Thakur. My opinion is that it is not necessary for us to utilize, this is another letter, for us to utilize these different musical talents for spreading Krishna consciousness. I would rather see people follow strictly the path of Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan devotees. We're using madanga, kartals, that is enough. We are not musicians, we are Krishna bhaktas. Therefore, we do not stress so much importance in his different musical talents. So now, here we see, just as we learned earlier, Prabhupada is saying we can mingle the Western and the non-Western. And then he's saying how one type of kirtan is Bengal king kirtan. And then he's emphasizing that not so necessary to think that we are musicians. Now, what is the contradiction? No contradiction. It's that someone can become so involved in the idea of the music that they can make that their worship. In as much as that they can become so much into the idea of performing that they push the God out of the way and they become the center of the absorption. Or they can become so much absorbed in even trying to do something so expert that they lose the actual bhakti. There's one example. Once in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was in his room, and one of our devotees, who was a really fantastic musician, he was playing harmonium and he was singing like really, really sweet. And Prabhupada yelled down into the courtyard, "Who is the demon down there, Chen?" And some people were shocked, but later people could understand, the devotee later blooped, that the devotee was expert, but the devotee was like chanting from the deity with the idea that everybody listened to him and enjoy his expertness. And Prabhupada, since that, was disturbed, because here the chanting from the deity and chanting and Vrindavan, such a sanctified place, is a time to render service and to fix the mind and selflessness and to fix the heart and pleading out and crying out and directing it to the Lord and trying to serve the Vaishnava and trying to enter into the whole consciousness of Vrindavan consciousness. Here someone is having expertness, you know, as a musician, and he might as well be in a disco, you know, playing and letting everyone be able to enjoy his excellence rather than the purports of the song, or rather than the cry of devotion. So sometimes Prabhupada gives some warning that we're not musicians, but we are devotees who may be musicians or may be cooks or maybe artists or maybe lawyers and maybe psychologists, doctors, etc. And as one is in that consciousness, then the action or the activity becomes an offering to the Lord. It becomes imbibed, you know, with devotion. But if we are something material first and trying to put in some devotion, then the whole potency will be altogether different, and one can even get distracted by then having no time for chanting, no time for association, no time for the devotional things, because one is having a kind of idealistic conception that I am a musician and I'm going to do something very, very spiritual when I become a famous, very famous musician. So I put all my time like that, and therefore I don't have time to read or other things. I stay in the studio all the time making the record that's going to be very famous and going to make millions of dollars and etc. And at the same time, while I'm trying like that, my devotion just goes down, down, down. Therefore, Prabhupada says, we do not stress so much importance on these different musical talents. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God himself. Had he thought it would be better to spread Krishna consciousness by another way, he would have done so. But not simply with madanga and kartals, traveling and chanting. Krishna is asking everyone to chant the Krishna mantra. Preaching simple Srimad Bhagavatam philosophy, that is process. Therefore, I request you to follow the simple path of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Keep yourself pure and fixed up in Krishna consciousness by following the basic principles that I have given. And then he, Prabhupada, tunes in and addresses the position about how to keep pure so that there's not a deviation. He says, so chanting 16 rounds daily, and of course following the four regular principles, rising early, attending Mangal Arati in classes. Then Prabhupada ends the letter to this GBC, says, and this is the utmost importance. So that becomes a foundation we build everything else upon. And something that somehow takes away from that, we know that that is unfavorable. The idea is accept things favorable for devotion, reject things that are not, things that are unfavorable, they take away from our interest and enthusiasm in following the principles. Concerning the recordings of Krishnadas Babaji, How can I make any judgment as I have not heard them? However, you should just go on chanting the Krishna mantra, Maha mantra, and the Panchatattva mantra, and don't divert your attention. You cannot understand the meaning of Indian songs and simply parrot-like chanting of these songs has no value. Then Prabhupada gives a few letters on temple kirtan. Hope you are all well in performing kirtan regularly. Kirtananda has learned one tune to be sung in the morning, which you should please practice as far as possible. Kirtan means both lecturing and chanting with music. It's both the same. The speaking, giving out the message about the Lord is kirtan, the propagation of the names of God, the message of the Lord, understanding what one's relationship is to the Lord. And the chanting, the japa, the chanting in terms of songs, bhajans, these are all kirtan, and that is hearing, remembering, chanting about the Lord. It is very encouraging to me to hear of so many activities of performing kirtan there. Kirtan is a universal principle. This has the quality in terms of the intensity of the kirtan affects each person's consciousness and affects the collective atmosphere. Just as I mentioned how sometimes in Prabhupada rare times, because most times Prabhupada would stay in the temple, sometimes he would stay maybe at someone's house, or in some rare case maybe at a hotel, or visit a new environment. He would chant kirtan, chant japa, even sometimes light incense, just to purify that room, purify the atmosphere. Because every place is so much captured by all kind of negative deeds and thoughts that remain just hovering over in the environment. So the kirtan has such a cleansing effect. We were discussing yesterday in the section on chanting how sometimes in Mayapur, especially during international meetings, the pujaris there go from room to room, frankincense, blowing conch shell, and singing kirtan, and the Shingha Day prayers, writing coverage prayers, as a way of chasing out ghosts, big powerful ghosts. Because when there's a great emphasis on spiritual activities, there's also great kinds of attacks or other polarities that are also drawn. So therefore, to clear the atmosphere, and especially from, you know, Brahma Rakshasas, or like entities who have even pursued the Vedic scheme and have gotten certain power, but have deviated, lose their bodies, and sometimes they also hover around as like ghosts. So now with so much ghostliness in different environments, by the kirtan, by the chanting, by the purifying the atmosphere, one's own mind, as well as the environment, then it raises the consciousness to the point that it can raise the atmosphere to where, this is once in New York, the audience are having a very powerful kirtan. And Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasa seat. Some of you may remember that story. And he was just smiling, looking over in different areas. And then later when Prabhupada retired to his room, some of the devotees were asking why Prabhupada was smiling so much and sort of looking off, you know, like at a distance. And Prabhupada said that Narada Muni had come to the kirtan. And that he explained how sometimes when the kirtans are very powerful, then they may even attract. Just as we were saying how people now are doing seances and Satan worship and witchcraft, and they literally draw so many negative beings. They draw so many disembodied entities who then possess them and get more power by feeding off the energies of others. Well, just as such negative things go by sound vibration and by certain mantras and certain chanting and certain mindsets, then as there is more intensified exchanges of devotion in terms of the chanting and in terms of the collective potent energy, then it draws more and more devotional reinforcement. That is why it's spiritual life is like an investment, that as you become more pinpointed in devotion, then you get a chance to become even more pinpointed, because you then align with more and more of a higher type of energy. And that's why association is a very serious thing, because if you associate in environments where there's too much dullness, then you also become dull. You associate environments where there's too much prajalpa or whimsical talk or gossip or fault finding, then you also become that. If you associate with environments where there is intensity about trying to renounce, trying to simplify your life, trying to keep Krishna forefront, trying to see how to deal with the material things so that you can have more time by accessing the spiritual, in environments where you're constantly thinking that in this lifetime you want to do whatever is necessary, go back to the kingdom of God, then what happens is that as you're in that environment, you get infected by the atmosphere. It says if you're in an environment where there is contagious disease, which is all over now, whether it's AIDS or tuberculosis or this or that. So by being in such an environment, then your own resistance gets affected. And in situations where the material disease is so much on the rise and it's so infectious, it is very important that we enter more into the reading of the literatures and more into the understanding of the bhajans and kirtans, what the message is, as we try to constantly take all of the books and the activities as a window in observing what is to be done, how it is to be done, so that we do that, so that we, when leaving this body, we're not any different from what we have been reading and thinking about. We've already so much begun to align with that, so that our collective thoughts and the resultant of our situation is that that's what's been more of what we've been investing in, and now that's what we now have. But if we've been listening to so many other types of vibrations, of so much mundane music, mundane conversations, mundane aspirations, or when in an environment where people are beginning to make Krishna consciousness a religion rather than a cultural experience. Religion means that I do it when I can, as I can, and that's all right. Religion means I go to the church, or I go Sunday to Sunday worship, or maybe I go, I'm a Sabbath worshiper, or I'm Muslim, I'm a Friday worshiper. So I go and I do my thing, you know, on that day. I've covered my God stuff, and pretty much now I do my other stuff, and that's my life. So that is religion, where it is not waking up in the morning, going to bed every night, in the spirit of taking inventory to see, what did you do for Krishna today? What did you do for Guru? What did you do today that allows you to feel a well-beingness, that you made some amendment to conscious raising? What did you do today that it can make you feel secure that the day you did something to give more arrangement for a higher spiritual energy to come on the planet? What did you specifically do today to encourage someone in knowing that God, that Krishna is a lovable God? What did you do today that added to the general supply of devotion? And if you can't say yes, yes, yes in those areas, it means much of your life is a waste. Because this particular body, human form, is an escape body. It is designed so that we can be in a situation where we can have all the experiences of the duality, of the frustration, of the anxiety, of the fears and whatnot, so that we can see and analyze all of that and now make a transition. So, if we're working, then we can see how the fruits of our work is being used directly and indirectly for conscious raising. So therefore we can see, oh yes, this work, I'm not getting the karma from this stuff. Because everything we do now, material energy, in one extent or another, is actually contaminated. And every time you even shake somebody's hand, you're getting contaminated. Every time you're in somebody's aura space, you're getting contaminated. Every time you move down the streets, you're being bombarded by somebody's thoughts, somebody's lust, somebody's anxiety, somebody's fear, someone's atheistness. Every time you buy something, you're supporting crime, you're supporting murder. Every time you buy something, so you're paying taxes, and therefore your money is being used for the weapons industry. The money is being used for suppressing people in many places in the world. Money is being used, for nuclear armaments. The money is being used, channeled through the mafia, channeled through for prostitution, for crime, for this, for that. The same dollar just went in your hand is a dollar that somebody just got from the lottery. But the whole place is contaminated. like anything. Now, the difference is that as someone is devotional, and they are also having to deal with some of these things, but they are not getting, having to deal with the karma of those situations to the degree that they are in a consciousness of service to the Lord. Otherwise, see how entangling it is in getting out of the material world. Because you're just constantly getting more and more stuff added on you, as if it's just pushing you down, unless there is a tight sadhana and there is a tight line of devotion where one becomes less and less affected as Krishna then compensates or brings one in. Just as we were given an example the other day, in Karmakanda, the Shastra, the Prabhupada mentioned something about it in the Nectar Devotion in TLC. How, like when you give to somebody, then there's karma involved. You give something to a person or do something, then, you know, the law of reciprocity of karma, what you do comes back. But like, I give an example of how sometimes philanthropic, especially Indian men, understand this science, and they build a temple, and some Muslims also. So they build a temple, or they give for an orphanage, or they do this, do that. But they're really realizing, by doing this, my business is going to expand many times over. Because I have put something in like this, and I know the science that if you do something in a pious mood, etc., then that comes back. So you'll find sometimes these huge, huge corporations that the immediate bureaucracy is very intense. Then you find the president of the corporation, some very, very simple, pious gentleman who's managing multi millions of dollars, and they are performing some devotion every day on a regular basis, and very kind to spiritualists, and contributing like this, like that, because they are knowing something about the actual science. But it may be sometimes punitive that they're doing it for particular reciprocation in the material scheme. But this is how the karmic situation breaks down.